Good afternoon, West Liberty. This is John, and you're listening to WGLZ 91.5, where we are college radio and we are passionately vocal. On today's show, I have a very special guest. He's not only a producer, director, and screenwriter, but also a member of the Directors Guild of America, and has had many years in the film and television and theater industry, Mr. Jonathan Burkhart. Jonathan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to be with you.
Yeah. Now, personally, I found out about you online. We had one of those assignments in school was like, look up yourself and see if there's anyone with the same name. And not only did I find someone with the same name, but also with the same career path that I would like to get into, which I found very interesting. Your many years in the film industry obviously had to start somewhere. So how exactly did you get started and interested in filmmaking?
So my mom and dad, I'm from New York City originally, but my mom and dad moved my brother, my sister and I to Nantucket Island back in 1970, which is a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And, my dad was an art teacher there. We were actually the poor folk because Nantucket's known for having rich people. We were not. I think I was in seventh or eighth grade. I went, because my dad was an art teacher in the school system where I went to go meet him after school to go home. And there was a bunch of guys standing around the closet in his art room that had a transmitter in it. The FCC at the time was experimenting with transmitting signals. And they put up a tower on Nantucket and a tower on Cape Cod, 30 miles away, to test signal strength. And that experiment lasted 2 years. And then they abandoned the project, but they left on Nantucket all the essence of what would be a broadcasting TV station. And some local family bought it, and they literally created what is known as Channel 3 Television. And by the time I was in end of my eighth grade or into ninth grade, I just went there every day after school. They taught me how to operate the camera. They taught me how to edit videotape and set up lights and microphones. And I worked there into my eighth grade all the way through high school every single day. As a matter of fact, I was there in the summer times. I was on the weekends during the holidays because it was a full-blown, fully operational TV station with TV shows, talk shows, news programs in the morning, news programs at night. And that's all I did. So by the time I graduated high school, I had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of experience as a camera operator, a video editor. I was directing news. I was a technical director, and so on and so forth. One of the main things that we did, because it's a small island, is that we would shoot all the sports. So we'd shoot the football games, the basketball games, field hockey, believe it or not. But the other big thing that really kind of launched my career further was that back then in the 70s, there was the March of Dimes telethon that people might have heard about that went around the country. And there was a division in Massachusetts. And I used to leave Nantucket in the spring and summer and on Saturdays go set up remote TV studios in high schools where they would put on a 24-hour broadcast to raise money for the March of Dimes. Mm-hmm. And that was a wild experience because this equipment would be rented and we'd walk into a high school and the gymnasium set up three studios, each with like five cameras. And then there'd be a massive control room back in some room, like a music room or a stage, which had like video switchers and amps and all kinds of stuff. And I would do this for years, which was a lot of experience in that we would literally set up broadcast centers from scratch. All these trucks would show up, we'd unload them, we'd build these studios and the control rooms from scratch, shoot for 24 hours, break them down and put them out, which really put me into the world of engineering, which I thought I wanted to do until I realized I was much happier shooting video and also producing. And I should also say that during that time, I got a phone call one day. Somebody called and said, hey, these guys are setting up this new company in Bristol, Connecticut, and they need people to set up cameras and shoot this basketball game in Hartford, Connecticut. So I went, and what it was the very early days, very beginnings of ESPN. Mm-hmm. And I did that for several years. It was a mess, by the way. There was no formal broadcast center like there is now. It was literally a giant garage with miles of cables and cameras and whatnot. And we'd load up trucks at like 4 a.m. and drive to some town in New England and shoot a basketball game or a hockey game.
Yeah.
But that experience, again, was like March of Dimes. And then I got to learn how to physically build production centers remotely. Graduated high school, went to Emerson College in Boston to study more television. But while I was there, I was introduced to motion pictures, so like actual filmmaking, movies and whatnot. And that that really got me a lot more excited than making television. So I left the world of news, I left the world of sports, and I started working as a producer and as a cinematographer, two very different jobs. I dropped out of Emerson because I couldn't pay my bill. And I moved to New York City, where just things took off for me. I was very fortunate and I met some really nice people. One thing led to another, and I was starting to produce short films and some feature films, which I really enjoyed. But as a producer, I was like the boss. What I really wanted to do was shoot. I missed the camera, so I decided that I would be a cinematographer, and I got into the union, and I spent about 12 years. I was a focus puller, I was a camera operator, and then I was a director of photography. But in 1996, that changed when my roommate at the time, a guy named Jonathan Larson, created a show called Rent on Broadway. And unfortunately, he died on the night of dress rehearsal from an aortic aneurysm. But his mom and dad asked me to stay with the show. So I spent the next 7 years on Broadway dealing with Rent. And because of the success of that, and the people who had all the money around it, I was invited to participate in making more shows. So I did some other shows on Broadway. And because I was around money, I started producing film, which is what I do today. I'm leaving a lot out at that point, but I can just tell you that I'm now about 20 years into producing feature films, which is how I pay the rent. So that's my story in a nutshell.
I think your story really shines light on how making connections early on and building your network can really help you in your career path, especially in the film industry.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a saying in Hollywood that goes, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Because you, there's no, the Hollywood system from the 50s, 60s, and 70s and 80s, where you work for a Hollywood studio where you made all your movies, doesn't exist. It's literally connections, like literally social media. The fact that you and I are talking because of social media is how we're going to work. What your best case scenario, my best case scenario is that you and I are making a movie in the next 5 years together. That's what we want to happen. It's really all based on connections. We just have to know. And one of the things I was taught, literally one of the guys I was working with in one of the March of Dimes broadcasts, when he asked me what I wanted to do, and I was 16, I said, you know, I want to make film and television. He said to me, you need to save every single name and phone number you find, every human being you meet. Write down their name and number, write down what they do, where, how you met them, like give them an attribute. And I started doing it back then. And to this day, my database, I've got to have, I don't know, 16, 17,000 people in my database. The vast majority are people who work in the television and film industry. And it grows and it grows. And that's the only way we can work.
We do have to take a short break, but we will be right back with Jonathan Burkhart here on WGLZ 91.5. Welcome back to WGLZ 91.5 FM, where we are college radio and we are passionately vocal. If you're just now joining us today, I'm sitting down with professional filmmaker Jonathan Burkhart on his time in the industry. And talking a little bit before the interview started, you were talking about you just wrapped up filming a show, which obviously during COVID-19 has vastly changed broadcasting everywhere from sports to TV shows.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate time. And listen, COVID just in general is screwing everything up for everybody, no matter what you do for work. Just everyday life has been turned upside down. I am in several unions in the film and television industry. And when COVID kicked in the United States back in March, it around June, all the unions and organizers got together to figure out how can we go back? How can we shoot a movie? How can we produce a TV show and get everybody on set? And it took 3 months to write up what is known as the white paper. But long story short, it kicked in around September or October. So only in the last 6 to 8 weeks has production in the United States gone back to work. Everybody has to wear a mask, obviously. But in the film and TV industry, you know, if you're on set making a movie, it's not uncommon to have 60 or 70 or 80 people all clustered together, making the movie. Sound department, camera department, hair and makeup, props and set dressing. And so there's an enormous amount of people literally only inches away. And that is the absolute norm if I make a movie. But because of COVID, we can't do that. So the entire process of people being separated is the way it works now, which means that if you're on set, if you're a camera operator and a focus puller and a boom operator, you're there now, just those people, the assistant director, one person to do hair makeup, one person to do wardrobe, the director and the actors, and that's it.
Yeah.
So it's only like 10 people on set, where everybody else has to be offset in another area. And what it does is it causes everything to go a whole lot slower. So the show that I just produced was a small narrative that we made. It was only about a 1-hour show, but normally where I'd spend, you know, a couple million dollars on a show like this, we only could spend like $100,000 because there's nobody to hire. Like, I can't have my 60 to 70 people. I had like 25 people. And instead of shooting at like 15 locations, I had one location.
Yeah.
So what COVID's doing is making things very, very simple, very small. I don't think you and I are going to see the difference in this type of programming tomorrow or in the next 6 months, where you and I and everybody's in the country around the world are going to see a difference in how film and television is made is going to come like into year 2022. Because everything that's being shot right now or shot into 2021, we'll sit in the editing room for 6 months to a year, and then we'll probably see at the end of 2021, like this time next year or into 2022, we're going to start seeing weird, awkward film and TV. Like, it's just so weird. I can't go into great detail because it would bore the heck out of you, but I got to tell you, it is not a good way to make movies. The whole art of making a movie or TV show is it's a written script, and we're trying to make the audience engage and laugh and cry and keep them coming back, like a scripted episodic series where I can't wait to see the next episode. And the art of making a movie or TV show is this collaborative industry where we're constantly working inches away from each other, touching, moving, tweaking, organizing, and that can't happen now. We can't do that. And so I don't want to say that we're making really crappy television and film, but I will tell you, it's radically different than the way it normally is done. And I don't know what the final product is going to look like. Maybe we can't see the difference, but I can only tell you that when I'm on set these days, it is nothing like it used to be. And I just don't know what things are going to look like. I will say this. You're going to see a lot more TV and film shot on an iPhone, handheld.
Yeah.
And you're going to see a lot more stuff with no fancy makeup, no fancy lighting, no fancy set dressing. Like, things are going to look – I think we're going to have a big low-budget look for the next couple of years.
Yeah.
So definitely. That's what's happening.
To touch on that a little bit more, I definitely know, like, one of the first things that came back were, like, the late-night talk shows, all interviews on Zoom from the house. Like, it really changes the standard.
Those are easy. See, that's a beautiful thing, because a one-on-one conversation with Stephen Colbert or I can't remember all the guys' names, Seth Meyers or somebody, that's an easy thing to do. But imagine, we were talking about sports earlier. You know, the fact that baseball season had some smaller version of itself, most of the games had nobody in the background.
Yeah.
Well, so what did we learn this summer when we watched baseball? Because I'm a huge baseball fan. Is that the games were quiet. And what the networks did, what ESPN or ABC or CBS or NBC did, was they pumped in fake background noise. So if somebody hit the ball, somebody was running in control, would make you hear cheering sounds, but then they would knock it off and it was gone. You knew it was canned, it was fake. And so it's an odd, strange time. But again, late night talk show is the one thing that really has no problem going forward.
I know I watched a couple of baseball games, but I'm a big hockey fan. And just like you said, the difference, like the artificial crowd noise and dealing with no fans, because, I mean, most sports today, they're built around that spectacle of you have a couple thousand fans in a stadium.
Right.
And it's interesting. It's definitely interesting to see the innovation that they've developed, but it will definitely be interesting to see moving forward how this changes.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I would definitely like to thank you for your time today. I know you have to go here in a few minutes. Thank you for your time. It was definitely very humbling to get to talk to you and hear a little bit about how you got into the industry.
Sure. And I'm happy to talk anytime. No problem.
Just a reminder, you've been listening to WGLZ 91.5. Have a good day, everyone.